You're listening to Making Life Brighter, and today we have a special supplement with Mr. M.B. Gordy, and he is the acclaimed drummer and percussionist and super educator and all-around great guy. And he's come to Making Life Brighter Radio to talk with us. So if you want to go and check out that interview, definitely go to the archives, either on iTunes under Winifred Adams. You can check it out on voiceamerica.com. And you can go to makinglifebrighter.com and check it out on the player there, of course. But we have some more for you today because we didn't get to it all. And there's so much we could talk about. We're having so much fun here today. M.B. Gordy is a super duper percussionist, and he has played with everybody from Guns N' Roses, John Tesh. He just came off the road with Josh Groban, I told you, and John Legend. And he's done all kinds of film work. He has done Jack Reacher and Fantastic Four and Harry Potter and Spider-Man and, oh my goodness, and we talked about this. He just won a Grammy with Opium Moon, and that had to feel so good. Did it feel good?
It was. I think I mentioned to you when we were first talking when I got here that it wasn't necessarily for me that winning a Grammy was ever something that I was like, oh, I got to win a Grammy, man. I got to get a Grammy. I was always watching the show going like, I want to be playing on the Grammys or playing in the band because I know all the, you know, I work with all these people. So like, I'm going like, that's what I want. I want to be in that pit band, you know, whatever. So, which has not happened yet, as a matter of fact. What was funny though was when we won, and I'm walking up on stage, and the band's playing that slinky, that groove that they were doing. I look and I go, "Who's playing? Oh, Luis is playing percussion. Oh, there's Jeff playing keyboard." It's like I knew half the people up there were like, "Hey, man, what's up?" it was really funny. And
isn't that fun? Doesn't it blow your mind, like the little kid from Baltimore area, Maryland.
Maryland, yeah.
And there you are. You won a Grammy. You've played with all these amazing talents and people. You're on the inside. You're on the outside. You're basically in all sides. And when you go see a movie or you watch TV, what's that feel like?
It's, you mean when I'm hearing, having played on me? Some more exciting than others. Not that the others aren't as exciting. It's just some kind of stand out a little bit more. Like, for example, me and three other guys were the only musicians, other than Clint Eastwood himself, playing piano on it, but on American Sniper. So all the percussion is me and three other guys. And that was pretty exciting. And that movie ended up doing really well, and it was like, wow, whoa, who knew, you know? Or Frozen, who knew that movie would be as big as it was, you know?
A monstrous hit.
That's probably the biggest movie I ever played on. I mean, it's got to be. I mean, that, me personally. Now, listen, I work with a lot of people, and a lot of my peers have, you know, who do even more work and studio work than I do, have played on, their filmography is insane, and, you know, there's so many big movies, but Frozen's pretty darn big, you know. So like, and then there's the Batman movies, and you know, like all that. So there's chains and franchises of movies that have, you know, the Bourne Identities, the Mission Impossibles, you know. So big ones like that. But for me, I'd say Frozen and maybe American Sniper might be the biggest. There could be some other ones. Transformers, I think.
Spider-Man?
Yeah, Spider-Man. In fact, I've got a session coming up in a week and a half on the new Spider-Man movie.
Right on.
From Michael Giacchino. So,
yeah. I'd say congratulations, but it's actually part of your world. I mean, this is your life. This is what you've created and who you be.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me. It's like I love playing a lot of different kinds of music. So I'd really be hard-pressed if I was going to be forced to make a decision, if somebody said, look, you're going to be a drum set player, you're going to be studio guy, that's all you do, you're going to be, or you're just going to play hand drums, or you're just going to, whatever. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't think I...
Variety is good for you.
Because I played with the Doobie Brothers for 4 years, you know, back from 2001 to 2005. And listen, it was awesome. It was great. It was a great experience, and I'm glad I did it. I'm also glad that I'm not doing it. And that's nothing against the Doobie Brothers. It's just that, like, for me, doing the same music over and over again is
a little like Broadway show.
It's hard to do. Now, listen, if I was maybe I'd feel different. I was part owner of that band, you know what I mean? Because, listen, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it's like we're going to be in this situation with Opium Moon. As we progress and as we do more and more shows, and this, you know, we're going to have to do these tunes that we won the Grammy on. So, and I got to say, I'm not tired of them yet. We play them all the time. We've played them a lot over the last, because this band's actually been together 3 years.
It's beautiful, by the way. And if you haven't heard of Opium Moon, just go get it and download it and listen to it. It's hypnotic.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good word. That's, I use that word as well. We sometimes call it, it could be meditative, it could be, you know, good for yoga, it could be Kama Sutra music, take it wherever you want, you know, whatever. We just see a lot of classifications on this music. But at any rate,
it's healing to your soul.
Yes. And it's healing to our souls when we play it. That's what's really awesome about it. There's other elements around what's happening with the band and the world that can eat at you and kind of bring you down, you know. And
you just have to hold that portal, though. I mean, you're basically creating something that's very light-filled and uplifting to people, and it's relaxing. And so, you know, holding on to that is sometimes a challenge in this world. But it that's the opportunity. And you're the master. You hold the key.
Yes, you do. Well, there's two things to that, okay? So one is that, let me backtrack real quick. So if had I only chosen to do one thing musically, I wouldn't be in this band because I wouldn't be playing these instruments. And I would have never met these people.
Right.
There's that. Because there's a whole backstory. We don't have time to get into the backstory of how I met the... I've known Lily for a long time. And I've known her husband for a long time through his brother. His brother and I have done other shows and other formats together. And so I knew the two of them. But there's a backstory about how I met Hamid at this other thing. And then we came back around. So anyway, so there's that. So yeah, I wouldn't have had the background instrumentation-wise to be able to even do this gig. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, like, I love playing a lot of different styles of music. That's two. I lost my thought somewhere along. Oh, so the music is healing and it's transformative in the sense that, like, so when we play it, there is a lot of improvisation to it as well. There's the themes. They're not going to change. But maybe the length of the solo changes, what we do in the solo changes, and that kind of ties into jazz in a sense, because when you're playing jazz, it's all about, you know, you got your melodies and you got your head, you know, the theme, whatever, and then you're playing over the chord changes. Well, now in the music that we do, it's not as intense chord change wise like a bebop tune or, you know, whatever, but or a hardcore jazz tune, but there is that improvisational element. It's probably more Indian, and it's more Middle Eastern and Indian based in this sense, but in harmonically and melodically. But so those are the things that go into what we do. And that's what I love about it. So we're gonna have to deal with the fact that we're gonna have to be playing these things. We're not gonna be adding drum set to this stuff.
Well, can it be like its own onstage meditation? Because since it is a little hypnotic, do you ever lose yourself in that? Do you ever feel like you're going into, and I know this is gonna sound a little campy, but an altered state as you're playing, whether it's this or any other music?
Yes, and that's thank you for reminding me what I was originally going to say a second ago, because I forgot, because I have CRS, because I'm old. But, so anyway, it's yes, that is key. My feeling is that when you, as a musician, when we play, and I say we, meaning all musicians, can't really ultimately speak for anybody else, but that you're basically just a channel for what's happening with that music and your interpretation of it. And that could mean a lot of, that could go a lot of places, because like with this music in Opium Moon, you know, it's our music. So we do what we want with it. But still, hopefully you're channeling, and it's not about, hey man, look at my chops. Look at how badass I am. Look at the solo. But. It's not about that. It's about just channeling whatever you can channel emotionally, musically, you know, all that, spiritually at the same time. And so that's one thing. And then when you do, say, when I play like a, you know, a film piece of film music, I'm still channeling. It's just like I'm channeling what the composer wrote, you know, and somebody else wrote. And but they are having you do your thing with it. Not that there may not even be a lot of room for improvisation, but your style of playing goes into it. So you're channeling in that sense. So yeah, ultimately that's I try to get into a zone when I play of like, and I don't care if I'm recording or playing live. That's why I still like playing live. I'd be hard pressed to make a decision on that too. Oh, you're just going to play live or you're just going to do studio work. And I can't do that. I love doing both and they require different things. And I'm not going to change that at this point in my life. But
you play so many different things in different styles and you just came off the road. You won the Grammy with Opium Moon. You're going to be out on the road with them in the future. You just came off the road with Josh Groban. How was that?
That was awesome. That might be. I also got to do the Game of Thrones tour last year, and that was maybe the biggest tour I've done. Josh's tour is pretty big. I say Game of Thrones was big in the sense that it was longer than anything I'd ever done before. So we did a week of rehearsals, then 6 weeks in Europe, and then off for the summer, and then we did 6 weeks in the fall. Those were long stints for me. Because being a LA musician, bass musician, and studio player, I don't, you know, listen, that could be a death sentence. A lot of my peers wouldn't even consider doing what I just did. They just don't. They don't go on the road. And, you know, I had the opportunity. I love Ramin Djawadi's music. And he asked me to do this. And I was like, sure, yeah. I mean, I would love to. Obviously, you got to work it out financially and all that. But, and then I was subbing for a friend on Josh's gig. And there's a whole backstory to Josh Groban's gig, too, because I originally got his gig on drum set when I was playing with the Doobie Brothers. But it didn't work out. It didn't follow through. And then I played on a record of his 6-7 years ago now. And then my friend Pete, when he got the gig, the live gig with Josh, he goes, "Hey, dude, man, I'm having to learn all your percussion parts now." And now I'm going, "Hey, Pete, now I got to learn all your percussion parts because Pete's been doing the gig." So my friend Pete, and so I had to learn. So
great.
And the thing about Josh's gig was cool. Ties into a big element of what I do percussion wise. There's timpani. There's electronics. There's dumbek. There's bongos. There's congas. There's kind of classical, more classical, you know, the classical side of things, kind of orchid cymbal swells, some tambourine playing, rock and shake groove, you know, tambourine playing, keeping time, shaking playing time. It's nothing insane, but at the same time, it's like it crosses a lot of barriers musically for what I can do. And it was fun in that sense. You know, it was really fun. And Opium Moon's a completely different thing, or like working on a record right now with a buddy of mine, and I'm playing drum set on it. So I like doing a lot of different things, and that's not going to change for me. You know,
do you have one particular instrument that you really resonate with?
That's a tough call.
It depends on the context of what you're doing, yeah, right?
I think it has a lot to do with that. I would probably, because drum set was my first instrument, and I would probably say, that's just so hard to do, but I'll go out on a limb and go, like, if somebody said, and I had to make a choice, it would probably be drum set. That said, I'm not making that decision because if you were going to put a gun to my... No, maybe I shouldn't use that analogy. That's not a good one under this day and age. But anyway, I would just have to say, I don't know. I can't decide. Because like at Opium Moon, Lily particularly loves when I'm doing, like, just playing the frame drum. Yeah. I don't want to only be playing frame drum in this band or any band for that matter. But I got to tell you, it's really fun. It's cool. And I do go through these moods sometimes where, and I've said this to these guys and I've said it to other people too. I mean this seriously. I can listen to a drum set or a solo of any kind all day long from, you know, Giovanni Hidalgo on congas or, you know, Zakir Hussain on tabla to some of the great African, different countries around African masters to, you know, Steve Gadd and a ton of other drum set players to on and on and on. I could listen and I can absorb that and I can appreciate it and I can, you know, most of the time wishing I could play that way on any given instrument. However, conversely, I go through periods where I could care less if I ever play a solo ever again in my life. I just want to play groove. So when, you know, I could sit there and play frame drum, boom, 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 I could do that for an hour.
Well, maybe it's a little bit about, you know, the timing, your chemistry, how life is going at that time, and each thing might lend to that and how you feel about it, right? I mean, music is fluid and you're organic, and so it's
part and parcel of that. You know, and you know,
harmony
quick,
of soul.
Right, and quick story about that. So I have this other band, which we haven't done anything in a long time, with a good buddy of mine, Carl Vincent, who's a bass player. And we have a band called Chaos Theory, K-A-O-S-Z. You can look that up online too, Theory. And it's exactly that. It's total chaos with a K. But meaning we don't work.
Dissonant chaos or harmonic chaos?
Both. Both. We don't rehearse. We don't write tunes. We show up at a gig and we start playing.
That's fun.
It's out. And I cannot tell you how many times, and this has been my experience now when I think about it, even with Opium Moon or other gigs that I do, you know, you could go through the day, you know, like you've been at session, or maybe you've been teaching, or maybe you've just been doing life, your life stuff, having to deal with bills and whatever all day, or lame customer service on the phone about something, you know, whatever, which is very common these days. And so anyway, and then all of a sudden you got to show up and you got to channel, you got to be on and you got to channel. And it's like, now when you're improvising, your cojones are more on the line than when it's just all written out. Here's the music. You're just, you know it. You just regurgitate it back. You're going to play it great, but that's one thing. But when you got to improvise.
Yeah, now you got to feel it and you got to be there 1,000%.
Yeah.
In that moment.
And there's more things that can go wrong. Bad notes, you're not hitting the chord changes right, or, you know, rhythmically as a percussionist or drummer, whatever. But so I can't tell you how many times I would show up. I was only speaking about myself now, to a Chaos Theory gig. And it's happened with Opium Moon. It's happened with a lot of different situations as I think back about it now, where you just go like, oh, man, I'm burnt. I'm not feeling it, man. It's going to be tough to get to this gig tonight. And then you start playing, and it's all gone.
And it's elixir to your soul again, right?
Yeah. And that...
like you can't live without it, and sometimes you can't live with it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so that's what I love about playing music, you know what I mean? It's like, and then the other part of that equation is, like I was going to say before, and I think I forgot that too, which was your channeling. Well, when you are in the moment, it's kind of like meditation. When you're in the moment, really truly with the breath and in the moment and all that other stuff that goes along with it, time just goes.
Yeah.
You have no sense of time. When you're not in the moment, you're thinking like, okay, it's been 5 minutes. It's like, oh my God, it's only been a minute. Are you serious? Whoa. Or, you know, but then I remember there's this, the grandmother of my first wife, she and I were really tight. And I would go visit her, and she was like obviously way older than me, you know, and she was still kicking. She was smart, brilliant mind, you know, I love this woman to death. And but physically she was falling apart, but you know, but I'd go visit her, and when she was in a nursing home, I'd go visit her, and we'd just start talking. And I'm talking about a woman who's like, you know, 60 years older than me, or 50, whatever it was. Big gap though. And we would just talk and talk and talk, and the next thing I know, I'd be like, oh my God, I mean, my way I go. I've been here for 5 hours. You know, and it's like, talk about being lost in time, you know. Yeah. And I think about that all the time with people that we meet, music that you play, just different situations you're in. When you're in totally in it and living it, you're not thinking about anything else. You're just in it, doing it.
Doesn't it seem like time elongates in those moments? Like it extends somehow. It's just
actually
suspended.
Yes, it's suspended is better, because I don't know, it actually feels shorter.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. It feels like, though, if you put it in the context of a day, it's like, wow. Like the day got longer somehow,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and who knows? Maybe there are more than 24 hours in a day.
Right. On some other dimensional frequency, yeah. There probably are.
Well, now think about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to flip you out here, because I just we were just
not likely, but I'm going to go for it.
Okay. Well, we remember we were just at the CBC and we were talking about changing scales, right?
Right.
See, we've all been brainwashed in listening to Western music that there's 12 notes to a scale. Well, we just Harry Parched. Now we know there's 42 notes according to him with tuning a scale. My friend Chaz Smith, who makes his, I'd love to get him down here and have you guys experience him, but. He makes these amazing instruments, and he's got a whole thing, 12 tones. What was his thing? 32. Anyway, he's got a whole micro tuning system that he does from octave to octave, and it's all mathematics. So if that's the case, and you can do that with pitch, then conceivably, there are more than 24 hours in a day.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm serious. I never thought about that until this very minute.
I get that. I'm with you because
it's just a measure of time. But if you use different math, that makes sense and works. Just like, see, we thought, oh, well, there's 12 pitches in a scale, and all of a sudden, not according to Harry Parched.
Right. Right. Well, he's dissecting and inverting and extending. But what he's doing is it's almost like taking an accordion and opening it up wide, and you get to see in between everything as opposed to just what the outside of the accordion looks like, and it's all folded together. So you're extending that out and seeing in the middle, in the in-between.
Yeah, yeah, right. So anyway, who knows? I'm not a physicist, so I don't know. Maybe you can't extend 24 hours, but seems to me in this concept that we're talking about, on a metaphysical sense, let's say it that way, on a metaphysical sense, maybe that is what's happening.
What is your favorite time signature? Because I believe since you're a rhythmic person, you know, different people have different ways of expressing themselves, and of course those things matter, they're different, and you deal in time signatures at the core.
I really like 6/8 and 12/8, but I think if I was to pick one, that 7/7, either 7/8 or 7/4.
Why?
I don't know, it's just something about the way that feels and what you can do. Bam bam. You can flip it all around, because if you study, if you know anything about Bulgarian music, say, or other culture, you know, well, Indian music even. Indian music is not about, you don't go like, oh, well, here's a measure or bar of 4/4 or 5/4 or 6/4 or 7/4, pick a number, because you can have any number on the top. It's a tala, which they call it, a tal. So you have ektal, which is 8, or is that 12? I'm showing my ignorance now. You know, there's tintal, obviously, which is 16. Okay, but you can have any number on top.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, any number of beats in a phrase,
mm-hmm.
and so that becomes the measure.
I'm reading this book right now, and it's talking about the time signatures from the Pleiadians.
Oh, now the Pleiades is one of my favorite places.
That's the sound thing she's talking about, which is exactly the word that you
this
just
book.
Said.
What is that book? I got to get that book.
I'm hoping she'll come too.
Oh
the
my
Pleiadian
gosh!
Promise.
I want to meet her. I got to.
Isn't that crazy? But that's the word you just
there's
said.
There's a weird story. I did a movie a bunch of years. Way long time. Right after I left CalArts, this guy who was somehow hooked up with these people who had done a documentary about these guys who had contacted these aliens, mm-hmm. these UFOs. And it was a thing in Switzerland where, and apparently this is all documented, and there was a movie about it, but it was all based on a book about UFOs and stuff, and these people meeting these aliens from the Pleiades.
That's what she says in this book, and that's what she's talking about. But she's talking about time signatures, and she's talking about the very words that you just used regarding Indian time signatures and how they frame their musical.
So that said, you know, you can have, and so at that point, it's like how, like I don't know if you were years ago or would know who Don Ellis was, but he was had a big band. And his pianist at the time, for the longest time, was this guy Milcho Leviev from Bulgaria, And I'm pretty sure that's the exact place he was from. It might have been a country near there, but whatever. But so they did this music that was these crazy time signatures. And it's like, whoa, how do you count that? Well, after a while, you don't, you cannot be counting. You got to feel it. But it was, it's just all subdivisions of two and three. One, dun, da, 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 da. And you could do that for as long as you want to go and then start a new phrase. Mm-hmm. So you could go like,
does it slide after a while?
No, I mean, it's very definitive. So here's, like, you could have there was a tune that they did that was in 23 and you're going like, oh my God, I wouldn't have to think about that and count that. You don't. You have to feel it. Once you know what that felt like enough, it's like practicing anything. Once you know what that was, then you go, oh, okay. It's dun, 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 dun. I'm not going to try to figure out the 23 right now. But anyway, but whatever that was, you get, oh, and there's dun, 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 new phrase, dun, 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 dun. And that's the melody, mm-hmm. right? All based on these crazy just combinations of twos and threes. Well, you can do that. If you think about that, it's like that can just go, you could have 107 beat cycle.
Right. And it can go on and on and on. Yeah. And why I'm asking you about time signatures is I have this theory doing healing work and extreme healing work where you're working in quantum physics and you're bringing in basically mathematical grail codes. You're manipulating energy to apply it to something, which is basically a frequency. And you're having to use signature changes to affect those frequencies, right? So in this case, the overriding entrainment tool is me. Mm-hmm. And so I have to shift frequencies to meet different organs, different situations, different whatever. But I have a theory that people are drawn to what naturally attunes to them, heals them, balances them, keeps them even. And so I wondered what yours was, because I think that in exploration would speak to a person. You know how today we say, oh, what's your astrology? What's your sign? What's your whatever? I think someday it's going to be, what's your time signature? What's your vibratory frequency?
Oh, I'm going to start using that. When I meet musicians, say, what's your time signature, man? What's your time signature? They're going to think I'm crazy, but most people that know me know I'm crazy anyway. So it's awesome. That's a what's your key signature? I love it. I'm going to use that. I might even try that today.
Yeah, you tell them that the crazy lady in Malibu said that.
Yeah, right.
The one with the Pleiadian book on her table.
Right. I'm going to use that because I'm doing this composer seminar tonight. There are a bunch of composers coming over to my studio.
Great.
And I'm going to go, so, hey, so what's your time? They're going, huh? Oh, boy, this guy's totally.
But it's true. I think it's true if you break it down. If you were actually able to measure people, their personalities, and then their general output and what's harmonizing to them, I think what you lean toward is what you need, is what you work with.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's different for different people.
That's fascinating.
And different personalities. I have these kind of off-the-wall theories, you know?
You know, another thing, this sort of is part of this, it's an aside, but I've found that, like, tempos as well resonate with you. But that changes on a daily, maybe even an hourly, maybe even a half-hourly basis or something. Because I've felt like, you know, I've been in a session. You know, you got to play to a click track, which was what kind of like a metronome that keeps us together when we're playing a session, right? And let's say, pick 94, mm-hmm. right? I don't know why I said 94, but... I know why, because I've experienced where I was like playing and I'm just like, man, I just that just does not feel right. I can't get that settled. 93, not a problem. 94, not working.
Yeah.
But then the next day, 94 could be totally burning, man, and you're just sitting right in there, dude, you know, whatever. So this is true with a lot of and sometimes fast just is not going to cut it, and so other times you go like, oh, no problem. You know, like a fast swing thing or something or whatever. I don't know. Tempos are along the same line, I think.
Well, I believe that's true. And you know, how do you feel about the whole AI thing coming into, you know, what's upcoming for making music, because now they're trying to do like anti-gravity music making. They're actually doing this up north in one of the universities.
I don't know enough about it.
But
anti-gravity.
Yeah, they're doing music in anti-gravity now. But the whole concept of the human element is drawing in, like you said, as a channel, is drawing in your soul. And your soul is a unique contribution to any composition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Different than anyone else's soul. So if you have AI-type stuff, it takes away from uniqueness, or does it?
Well, I mean, I think so. But then, you know, I guess it could be a subjective thing. Somebody else might say, no, dude, it doesn't work that way. You're not really getting it. Because, we could backtrack a little bit and go, what about the concept? Let's get a little more primitive about it. Well, it's not so primitive, but it's primitive compared to AI stuff, is the world of sampling.
Yeah, right.
Right? You know, like a lot of people, just morally and musically and every other respect, are totally against it. And I am and I'm not. I'm against it in the sense of, like, if you're just going to sample a bunch of instruments and that's all you're ever going to use is those samples, well, I don't think your music's going to be that interesting. So I'm not really against it in that sense. I mean, in the sense of, like, well, that's going to be your downfall because you need to hire live players. There's a place for samples. Like,
but you've never been.
What about that? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You're not going to get that anywhere but there. So how am I going to use that if I don't, unless I play it live, but then that might not always be convenient. So there's a time and place, I think, for samples, and certainly with composers with mock-ups and all that kind of stuff. So there's a bit of a moral dilemma, but some musicians, playing musicians, are totally against sampling 100%, and that's their choice, and that's, I respect that, that's fine.
But you've never had a lack of work because of sampling. You've always had work to do because you're unique in what you do.
Well, I'd like to think that. I mean, you know, like, it's. I guess it's possible that, you know, like, I think on a certain level, I think maybe that world has hurt live music. Because there was a time, you know, back in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s, where all the TV shows had live bands.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The live musicians in the studio every week. Well, that went away because of samples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting debate, though, isn't it? I mean, it's an interesting flow through because
again,
where are we going?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I mean, you know, so anyway, all that to say, let's get up to the AI thing now. Well, now if you can go, like, okay, you can just push a button on a computer and go, and the computer has all these parameters of rhythm, sound, all these other chord changes. Here's a Beethoven. Here's something, you know. Here's a sample of. Here's the way Beethoven piece. Here's Mozart. You keep going on, and you could, so much music. I mean, good luck. And you say, okay, I want to pick. God, there was a guy who used to do this. I want something in the style of Beethoven, and so the computer's going to analyze that, and boom, and spit it out. It was like, well, the computer programmed it. I mean, wrote it. You didn't. And no, you know, human did. It might be awesome. I don't know.
Maybe.
And then hopefully, though, if that's the case, then the computer better be the one who's getting the paycheck for it.
And it better be your computer.
You know what I mean? Otherwise, how can anybody claim the fact that they wrote that? They didn't.
Right. Well, that's going to get really interesting at some point. It's going to go down the rabbit hole a little bit, and who has intellectual property, and maybe we're going to just expand so much that we don't have intellectual property the same way we did before. Maybe it's more communal collective property or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, before we go down that road, I really want to get back to some of your favorite experiences in the studio or on tour. Some of your most moving or funny or something that's really touched you along the way, because you've done so much work. You have such a body of work.
God, there's
live or recorded. Yeah. I mean, you've worked with
people. Yeah, one really special thing for me was I did not get the gig with Frank Zappa playing drum set, but I got to audition, and I was there for 3 hours. And I'm going, like, well, if I can hang at a Frank Zappa audition for 3 hours, I'm like,
that's cool.
That's cool. And it was awesome. It was great. I didn't get the gig, and he was as cool as it gets and totally respectful, and it was just a great experience.
The experience of just hanging and being there.
But I did get to play with Frank after that. It was an aside. So my buddy of mine that I had a percussion trio with was hired as a copyist, or an extra copyist on some music, and he took the idea upon himself to go, hey, would you guys, me and this other two guys, and me and another guy that were in this in our percussion trio, Art was hired to be the copyist on some orchestral stuff that Frank wanted played by an orchestra, wasn't happy with what he was getting, so he said, fine, I'm not doing that. Can you just do a two-piano reduction of these orchestra pieces? And Art said, yeah, that's great. So he starts doing this, and then he got the idea, and he says, hey, why don't we add percussion to this? So he took the six percussion parts from the orchestra, melded those down into three players, plus the two pianists. We learned these three pieces, auditioned them for Frank. He loved it. And he said, you're hired. So we're going to rehearse every other week for 8 weeks. I mean, eight rehearsals every other week, and then we'll record.
Wow.
We got through the seventh rehearsal, and the Buffalo Phil consented to doing the pieces, and he really went into the orchestra versions instead of ours. So we were one rehearsal away from doing a Frank Zappa record.
Oh!
So I got to play for Frank, and there's actually, I can prove it because there's a picture of it, so I'm not lying. But I don't have recorded proof that we did it because, you know, but that was an awesome experience too. But something that came out of that, two short stories, when Art went around the room, when Frank was there, and he said, and this is after I had auditioned, so this was a few years after I had auditioned for his band, Art introduced everybody. Oh, this is Bob. This is MB. Blah, blah, this is Lauren. Whatever. So, and I go, hey, Frank, nice to meet you again. I don't know if you remember me. I auditioned for you on drum set. Chad, and he was with Chad Wackerman, who got the gig. Chad was there at this rehearsal. And Chad got the gig. I said, well, I didn't get the gig. Obviously, Chad did, but, you know, whatever. And Chad's an awesome drummer. So I don't know if you remember me, but you know. Anyway, nice to see you again. He goes, he stops and thinks for a second. He goes, oh, yeah, man, I remember you. You were one of the better ones. And I go like, okay, I will take that as a compliment for Frank. So better story yet. So now I'm remarried. My wife, with this current with the woman I'm married to now, and we were living in Toluca Lake, and I was playing a gig not too far from our house, and she was out that night. I was playing a gig, and it was a private party, and it wasn't a lot of, I actually knew like the singer in the band. I didn't know a lot of the people in the band. So anyway, I'm playing and I'm listening to this keyboard player. I'm going like, oh my God, this guy's insane, man. This guy's so good. So anyway, end of the gig, and I go, hey man, nice playing. You want to trade? You know, everybody trades numbers and stuff. Hey, and I don't remember if I had a card or not. And he goes, yeah, and he writes his name and number down. And I look at this sheet and I go, Tommy Mars? You're Tommy Mars? He was in Frank's band, and I was playing with him when I auditioned.
Yeah.
And I go, I was like having heart failure. I'm like, oh my God. And I go, like, dude, what are you doing here? Like, I'm thinking, what are you doing with this guy? And he goes, because I'm getting paid. It's like, and I go, like, oh, okay, great. Anyway, so I mean, I was just flabbergasted, and I go like, dude, I don't even remember, but I auditioned for Frank. This, now we're going back a bunch of years, and he goes, and I go, yeah, I got to audition for Frank, and I didn't get the gig, obviously, but Chad got it, and he goes, oh, dude, I remember you. Yeah, you were one. He said the same thing. He goes, you were one of the better guys. He said, you wouldn't believe some of the people that came through there. I was like, oh my God, okay, I can go home now and feel good about myself because I got two, now it's the second compliment
that's
I got.
That's right.
So anyway, that was a crazy story. There's been a bunch. Oh my God.
Who's one of your favorite artists that you've worked with that you've
well,
worked
I
on?
Gotta say, well, doing that tour with Ramin and the Game of Thrones tour was really awesome. Doing the gig with Clint Eastwood was amazing. I mean, it was Clint Eastwood. Come on, man. There's a whole story about that, but which I don't think we have time to go into. But it was amazing. You know, oh my God. Well, I'll tell you. I've done a lot, was able to get on a lot of really cool projects, records and whatnot through a friend of mine. Now I say friend now because we're friends now, over the years, a guy named David Campbell, who is Beck's father. I've known Beck since he was like 11. So we got to do this really cool project with Beck one time. It was called Beck 360. It's a Lincoln commercial. And Beck was in the center, and then there's an audience, and then there's 160 musicians around the outside, a gamelan, a percussion ensemble, a band, two different choirs, a brass group, strings, nine guitar players, a batucada band, you know, it was insane, alpenhorn player, piano. It was crazy. And that was one of the weirdest and coolest gigs I've ever done. And I got to actually finally work with Beck after all these years of knowing him. But I remember one time when I was working with David, I said, hey, how's... Because I knew Beck and his brother. He's got a twin brother. And I said, hey, how's Beck doing? He goes, well, I don't... Man, he's doing music. And he's got like four record companies vying for him. I was like, wow, cool. I didn't even know he did music. He goes, neither did I. It was like, anyway, so... But that story all to say that... So I've... You know, David is one of... a very special person to me because Dave, not only has he brought me into a lot of really incredible projects, like Green Day record and the Neil Diamond records I've got to play on with through David, and hence got to meet Peter Asher, who was the producer. And Peter Asher is freaking amazing. I mean, it's, you know, his stories are insane, you know. So it's that, you know, it's that all, it's like this person and you know that person and you meet that and you begin, and it.
It's inspiring, isn't it?
It truly is, I mean, you know, and you got to remember, you know, like I might have my days and get into a funk and, you know, like, oh, you know, whatever the music business is, the music, because it's not easy. Music business is not easy, am I going to lie? But I've been really blessed and I've had some incredible experiences. And so anyway, fast forward to this thing with the project that I just did, the tour with Josh Groban. Amazing people. All the way around, you know, and I got to play with the Doobie Brothers. And I, years ago, the very first tour thing I ever did was, you know, I played with Three Dog Night for 6 months, and that was, wow, these are people I was listening to when I grew up. I mean, there's still a lot more, you know, I grew up listening to the Doobie Brothers. Now I've got to play with them, you know, so there's just a ton, you know, and then, you know, all the different sessions that I've done. And I just remember one, there's quite a few composers that I really love working with. One is my friend Chris Young. I love working with him, and I've done some really great projects with him. And Marco Beltrami is another one.
He's out here.
Yes, and Chris Beck, and I can't remember now if it was a Chris Beck session. It was either Chris Young, Chris Beck, or Marco. I'm pretty sure it was one of those three. And there was a cue I wasn't playing on. We were at Warner Brothers, and there was a cue we weren't playing on. I wasn't playing on. And so I was just kind of standing in the percussion section, but kind of up towards the front of it, so right behind the woodwinds and the French horns. And this was this beautiful cue. And, man, I just almost started crying because I was like, this is as good as it gets. I'm standing in the middle of this amazing orchestra in Los Angeles listening to this incredible music by the best players in the world. Not there's great players everywhere. And if I go home tonight and get in a car accident and die, I'm good, because it just this is awesome.
It kind of came full circle.
Yeah, it was amazing. And so you have moments like that, you know. And it could be just a tune. There's a really special tune for me that Herbie Hancock does an amazing version of it, but it's a Peter Gabriel tune, Don't Give Up.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing else to say.
Oh, yeah.
That tune, you can be as down as you want, put that tune on.
Absolutely. It'll get it. Have you ever worked with him?
No, I wish I had, but not yet.
Yeah, I think he just bought a studio or something. He has a studio here in Santa Monica somewhere.
He does?
I think so.
Okay, I'm going to have to meet him then.
There you go. Okay. Don't give up. You might yet. Well, I want to say thank you very much for coming and being with us. MB Gordy, everybody, and you can check out Opium Moon on iTunes, all digital.
iTunes, Spotify, I guess Pandora.
All digital media. Yeah, you just check it out. Opium Moon.
You can buy the record.
Yeah.
Probably CD Baby and from our website.
Buy the record, definitely.
And we have a little swag too, t-shirts and something else, whatever. And then And then there's our website. There's what else? We just did a big TV show about a month ago now, and it's all over Persian TV. And so that's on Manoto TV is that network that's around the world. So we're on that. So, you know, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for making our lives brighter, and thank you for sharing your gift and your talent and your spirit with us. We appreciate it so much. So hopefully we'll have you back again one day, and you'll come visit us. Maybe you'll even play a little bit something for us one day. All right, MB Gordy, everybody, and Making Life Brighter. You can check out all the archives on makinglifebrighter.com, and feel free to share with anybody you know who gets inspired by music and great artists like MB Gordy. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.